Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 58, SSD State of the Union, episode 1. Here we go. Today my guest is Jason Perlow. How you doing, Jason?
What's up, Rickatron?
Nice. Hey, I'm still fighting this beast of a cold, but my mind is in the right place. I'm feeling okay. I just don't sound it.
I'm sounding kind of crappy myself. I've been drinking lots of water. I flew home from Chicago last night. I had that scratchy feeling in my throat thing going on.
Yeah.
So I hope it doesn't develop into something else, man. But every time I travel, man, I get sick.
Well, you know, I used to be that way, but the last couple times I've traveled, Las Vegas and California, I didn't get sick, and it wasn't because they were all sanitary people on my plane. It was just that the weather was good or whatever. I don't know. But you know what I started doing, Perlo? I started using that hand sanitizer all the time like crazy.
That stuff doesn't work, though. They've done scientific studies that say it doesn't do anything for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well,
maybe you're psyching yourself into health.
Yeah, probably. It might be psychosomatic. I'd buy that for a dollar. So, anyways. So, outside of your trip to Chicago, I know you've been busy. Anything else going on? It's been a while since I've talked to you.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of vSphere 5 implementation, so it's been sort of an uphill learning struggle, especially if you come from a VMware 3 or 4 background, and you have to sort of like suck in all the new features through a fire hose and implement them. So it's been challenging but very fun.
Oh, I know what you mean. It's if you don't have a lab, right?
Or
remember last time we talked was the VMTN subscription. So yeah, it's tough, you know. It's one of those things that you gotta learn as you go and become the expert as you go sometimes, and especially if you have somebody that really wants to drill down in some of those new features that, well, it might make sense for you. Let's figure it out together, okay? Outstanding. So Perlo, what I wanted to talk about today was what I think is going to be one of the next big disruptive technologies, if it has not happened already, and that's solid-state storage, okay? I think that this is a big deal, and what I'm doing is I'm looking out to a lot of people, and you're the first one that I want to get their take on it, right? How disruptive is it going to be for virtualization, for traditional storage provisioning, for the way we build our applications, right?
I think it actually really is the next great disruptor. The first great disruptor of technology in our industry was a transistor, right? 1947, we take vacuum tubes with these huge light bulb sized things that were incredibly heat generating and unreliable, and turned into the size of an eraser head, right? Which gave us the transistor radio. Transistors led to, of course, Intel and semiconductor industry in the early 1970s being able to put millions of transistors on a silicon wafer. And from there, of course, we've had this Moore's Law thing that's been going on for the last, 40 years? Mm-hmm. No. Processors doubling in speed in, over an 18-month period, in some cases getting shorter than that.
Yep.
So where we've seen the real big bottleneck has been in I.O.
Right.
And storage. And traditionally storage, at least for primary storage for computer systems, over the last 40 years, we've really been, since the Winchester drive was introduced, those have gotten smaller and smaller, more platters and more platters on them, density increasing. So we've gotten to a point where the hard disk platter technology has sort of hit its max.
Yeah, and I was talking with my guy Nigel Poulton, and it's truly a modern marvel what the magnetic rotational storage hard drive has gone through in terms of inventions over the years and rebirths in terms of engineering. But, man, it's like we've got this new technology right here. It, you know, it hooks up to the same interface, and, you know, like the transistors and resistors and capacitors that are on boards today, you know, it's all moving at silicon speed.
Yeah, and there's a lot of implications for that, not just the miniaturization aspect, but the whole IOPS aspect, because it used to be, like, you think about drives, right? You know, you think about RPMs, and you think about IOPS, and how many spindles do I need in order to produce X amount of performance? So, like, you know, you look at, like, your SQL Server, and you say, well, I need a terabyte of real storage, but I actually need 7 teras in order to get the IOPS that I need to handle the queries that are coming in. And with technologies like SSD, and I'm assuming, of course, we completely bypass the, you know, SASN and SATA interfaces, and we go to something completely native, right? Like some type of direct bus connection technology, which, of course, we know is the next logical step, right?
Yes, SCSI Express
which is to ditch the last 20 years worth of driver interface technology for something different, you know, that goes, you know, direct to the bus almost. Then you start getting into some interesting stuff, because an IOPS at that point is no longer a function of how many spindles, but of how many bus connections do you have, or how big is the bus connection, and how many of these drives do you need to stripe for redundancy? Because now it's no longer thinking about, you know, like large EMC drive arrays that have trays and thinking about metabs and things like that. Now you're thinking about stuff like the IBM XIV, which is a giant stripe of everything. There's no RAID 5. The whole thing is a stripe.
Right.
You know, and your LUNs are completely virtualized.
Right.
You know, there's no one tray of drives that is handling a LUN, and it's all over the whole thing. Well, so when you think about the miniaturization and the I/O, you know, implications, you're going to see tremendous density in data centers, and obviously, of course, you know, SSDs don't give off a whole heck of a lot of heat compared to the drives.
Right.
As you can hear from the audio next to me, the room I'm in now is fairly quiet. Just 6 months ago, you would have heard whining like crazy, because, like, my workstations, I have ripped out all of my Winchester drives, my hard disk drives.
Hold on. When you're calling them Winchester, I'll admit, Perlow, I had to Google that. That's like one of the very first.
But everything is in. You know, that just shows how old I am.
Just call it spinning rust. I mean, I'm thinking it's something from a gun catalog, man. Come on.
Yeah. So platter and head-based drives.
Right.
I replaced all my hard disk drives and gone with SSDs.
Really? Every single one of them?
Every single one of them, cool. Except for my servers, which, you know, I don't turn them on unless I need them, or I have them on a different side of the house. But I have been able to pretty much consolidate a lot of my key data between the cloud and SSDs, and which has led to extremely quiet operation. Now, of course, my desktops are these huge, giant, hulking things that originally had multi-terabyte drives in them. Mm-hmm. I could get away. My most used machine right now is a Mac Mini with an SSD in it, and my other machine that I use is my VMware workstation. Workstation 8 is a full tower, but it's got a couple of 256 gig SSDs in it. Eventually, I'm sure I could get the same performance down to the size of like a double height, you know, Mac Mini type thing. You know, it's just a question of whether or not these systems are going to need fans or not. I think eventually, for most desktops and laptops, are going to be completely fanless. I think that in the data center, we will have newer cooling and ventilation technologies that will be optimized for solid state. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have less and less moving parts.
I agree, and then we'll have to, there'll be less fans, and then there's going to be less airflow requirements within these chassis. So I think the density is going to take off, right?
Yeah.
We got to be mindful of the generation of the processors also, right? Because they still can put out a lot of heat, especially the older ones, so you got to make sure that you're watching your processors. But we're on the verge of something major. And actually, I think that's pretty cool that you've pretty much done a wholesale replacement of rotational storage with solid state at home. And but you bring up a good point, though. In the data center, right, that's the tougher sell, right? You might be able to you know, throw in some physical servers with some local SSDs and all, but and then we're talking shared storage or tiering solutions. And
yeah, I think what we're going to end up seeing, at least in the intermediate phase while we're in a transitional period, right? Because we know that, that from a cost data density perspective, you know, the hard drive is still king.
Right.
I think we're going to see over a 5 or 10 year period where data centers are going to segregate the processor complexes from the storage complexes. So essentially, we may see something like what Egenera tried to do way back with a processor area network, where you'll have a room which has more cooling requirements where the processors are stored, and you'll have separate rooms isolated, you know, cabled by fiber optics or other some type of high speed networking mechanism, where you'll have the SSD maybe tier one storage for like high speed cache. You know, things like, you know, memcached, you know, D or some type of hybridized store memory to and or I guess not really NUMA, but more of a unified primary storage environment.
Sure.
And then you'll have another room with different heating and cooling requirements for the big EMC drives and the IBM, you know, DS8000s and whatnot.
Well, your bulk, you know, dare I say, cheap and deep, right?
Right, because, you know, and this way, you know, you can manage your costs probably a little bit better. And I think eventually, you know, that first tier storage will become all your storage, mm-hmm. right? It would be all SSD. But there are still obviously cost issues to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there will not need to be that many data centers that have that level of SSD density, because I think with your average consumer and even your enterprise user probably using some type of thin client-ish device,
right?
Meaning, you know, I'm not saying everyone's going to use iPads, but maybe they're going to use something which will more leverage VDI than local processing.
Sure.
Then, you know, we don't really need that much local storage if that's the case. So while SSDs will still be more expensive than hard drives, I think that there will be more of a communal buy-in effect on this, and the larger data centers will essentially be able to price themselves in a certain way from a more of a building the cost of the storage into the subscription model. So your average consumer is not going to need to go out and buy terabyte size SSDs for, you know, $1,000, but the data centers will. And because we'll be using things like thin provisioning and other technologies for data efficiency, right? We will be able to make 256 gig go a long way, you know, compared to, say, a 2 terabyte drive.
Well, and that would be, you know, your example of the data center would need to go buy the 1 terabyte SSD, but, you know, Joe consumer may not. That would be just another kind of trick play that the data center technology practice has done differently. To your earlier point of when, you know, you really only need 1 terabyte for this database, but, you know, you've got to spread it out over, you know, 100 different drives that might be 70 or 20 terabytes. That practice, if I'm understanding you right, is what I'd call short stroking, right? Where you intentionally only use a little bit of a drive to deliver its full IOPS and really disregarding most of the capacity. You know, when it comes to how much do we really need, and if we kind of take away that trick, excuse me.
When you start dealing with dedupe technologies and thin provisioning and all that stuff, you can make a lot less go along our way. And if you don't have to do the 7 spindles to 1 terabyte thing with SSDs, because you have the much more efficient bus data transfer methods, you still get a hell of a lot more density.
Yeah, exactly. And the takeaway is you could take that density and couple it with utilization, right? So to rotational storage, if we, I don't know anyone that likes to fill rotational storage up. you know, run at that 80% plus full, yeah, right? You might have a VMware data store look like that, but what does the actual storage system say? Oh, no, you want to spread that stuff out as much as you can. You might not officially call it short stroking, but basically you're just distributing your workload to take advantage of all the IOPS, right, that you could get out of rotational storage. Now,
yeah, well, it's kind of like IOPS and redundancy are now going to be going hand in hand with each other rather than considered separate entities.
True, true. And then the question becomes, do you put RAID on SSD?
Well, I don't know. I think we have to think of RAID again as a technology that is probably, at least for the enterprise, I think is, if we start thinking about moving SSD into that world, we're really talking about, like I said, I was talking about the IBM XIV storage, right?
Right.
I mean, right now those things use SAS drives or SATA, but over an entire chassis, you know, and I don't know I forgot how many drives you can fill in one of those things.
Well, that's better than RAID because it's a whole rack, not just a chassis,
yeah,
it's a whole rack full of drives, the whole front of it, and literally you can throw one in.
One stripe of the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Just think of it like a storage grid of hard drives. That's really what it is.
Yeah.
It's a better way to put it. So
it's a grid of drives.
Yeah.
So I see SSDs more fitting into the gridding ideology than the 1980s and 1990s and 2000s RAID 1, RAID 5, RAID 10, you know, type of ideology, right?
I mean, I don't think RAID is going to go away. I think we're going to see, you know, RAID 600 come up or something like that.
Yeah.
But I was talking with Klaus Mikkelsen from Hitachi Data Systems, okay? You know, one of the really great storage engineers in the world and used to be with IBM. And it was one of those back-of-the-napkin type of calculations because in terms of rotational storage, he was predicting that we'd see 50, 60 terabyte SATA drives. And he then calculated how long a RAID 5 or RAID 6 rebuild would take with something like that.
Right.
And it was like in the 3 weeks range. And
right,
it's like, that's just not practical. So something's got to give, right? So
I agree.
Something's got to give. And I think that between rotational storage getting so big and honestly not much faster, and then solid-state storage becoming much more available, I think...
Yep.
I think we're on to something here.
So why the hell is my machine screaming right now?
Ooh, I do hear that. I thought it was traffic outside.
No, it's my VMware box. And it's like the fan just started blowing like crazy. I'm looking to see if there's some stupid screensaver or something going.
No, I remember I have...
Turn yourself off!
Sometimes a big CPU draw would make that happen.
Something is... I must have... Turn this damn thing off. Stop replicating. Turn off. Stop. Stop.
It's all good. It's all good.
All right. Hold on. I don't want your podcast to get messed up. Stop. Be quiet. Damn you.
There it's not going to be you that messes it up. It'll be me.
Okay. So.
But, you know, the takeaway, Jason, is that we're on the verge of some major changes to these technologies, and this is just at the hardware level. But flip it around. Are the applications going to take advantage of this in, dare I say, a reckless fashion? If they don't have to worry about being good stewards of the I/O, are we on to a series of problems there?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, just in the same way that we have had, you know, we have to do a capacity profiling of our application environment when we virtualize workloads, right? You know, I mean, you start seeing how applications behave, and then you start setting things like pools and shares and all that good stuff, right? As opposed to letting the whole cluster go, you know, willy-nilly with resources, right? Eventually, you start putting constraints on things as you profile them. That's one way of doing it. The other way is looking at performance requirements from the beginning and starting with constraints, right? So I think in the same way that we do this with CPU resources and memory, we're going to have to start doing the same thing with storage, right? So maybe we're not going to start looking at things from a, maybe from a pure quota perspective, but there will be better, I think, which, like, just like you have data visualization tools, we're going to have storage visualization tools to get a more of a snapshot on how this stuff is being consumed, especially if SSDs are the more expensive resource, right?
Mm-hmm. Good point. I think our management burden is going to increase. So just as our app people are going to have to be good stewards of the systems that they live on, our infrastructure professionals are going to have to be able to know and point the finger and, you know, kind of gatekeep all the stakeholders to reality check on who's doing what and make sure that nothing gets out of hand. I think that's going to be a ever important skill. Would you disagree?
Yeah, well, especially if you're working in, if you're trying to build a cloud environment in your organization, or rather or any type of shared infrastructure, mm-hmm. as opposed to some type of a siloed infrastructure where a lot of organizations are coming from, right? Especially if they merge with another entity and they had legacy resources and they're trying to pull them back into the thing and manage it. Mm-hmm. When you're building an environment like this that's completely virtualized, right, from the ground up at every tier of this thing, right, and people are basically essentially sharing into it, I do believe our management burden is going to be increased, but at the same time, I think that we will be able to have a finer level of granularity over the resources than we did before.
Yeah, and I guess I should also take that one more step and say, you know, it's not like that's a bad thing. Our management burden goes up, but also our capabilities are going up. You know, the IOPS of a traditional cheap and cheap SATA drive is around 70 to 90, right? I think the least expensive SATA drive is at least in the 20,000, or at least expensive SSD is in the 20,000 IOPS range, right? So, and there are some that are like double and triple of that. So note to the listeners that all SSDs are not created
That's
equal.
Correct.
So do a little bit of homework if you care about the details, but they can be anywhere from 2 to 3 to 4x difference in especially sequential read, right? Random writes are the toughest one even for SSDs, but check out some of the details, the specs of each of the units, because they're not all the same. So Perlo, any final thoughts on the SSD State of the Union? I know you blog about so much, Tech Broiler. I'll put links in the podcast notes. This guy's a celebrity. I like him. I got to meet you finally, by the way. That was an awesome experience.
Yeah, I wish we weren't so freaking physically exhausted. I wish we had more time to hang out socially during that thing. But it was that was taking it to the fire hose, and we're about to do it again.
Yeah. That was the Windows Server 8 workshop last September in Redmond. And whenever you're kind of in one of those heads down workshops, right, there's not really much time out of the plan, so cheers to that, but nonetheless was nice to finally get to meet you. So Perlo, thanks for being on the show again.
My pleasure, Rickatron.